yesterday in introducing the fourth foundation of mindfulness, Gil mentioned that kind of in a broad overview of the fourth foundation, it can be understood as an exploration of those processes that either lead us towards suffering or away from suffering. And in particular, he mentioned the hindrances and talked a lot about that as being one of those sets of processes that lead us towards suffering. But understanding that itself, it's interesting to recognize that as we explore our experience, this process of mindfulness creates the conditions for those, the understanding of those processes to lead us away from suffering. Today I'd like to explore, we're not going to cover all five exercises in the fourth foundation. I mean, I don't even think we have five nights of talks left, so we will, we're picking a few to highlight in this foundation. And the one that I'd like to explore today is the five aggregates. And in a way, it can be understood as kind of an understanding or exploring the process and nature of experience itself. Kind of understanding the engine of this process that's a human being. And the Buddha created this kind of description of five processes at work in our experience that kind of put together how we meet the world, but more accurately perhaps how these processes create our world, how these processes create what we are experiencing. And so these five processes, aggregates, are the body, feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, this aspect of feeling, perception, recognition of experience, mental formation, what we could call the volitional, intentional aspect of experience, and consciousness, the knowing aspect of experience. And these five processes are woven together essentially to create our experience. The term aggregate is a bit unusual. It's not a word we use in our everyday English often, unless you're a geologist, maybe. You talk about aggregate rock as a geologist, which is actually instructive if you think about what aggregate rock is. Aggregate rock is basically rock made of other rock. And that's kind of what the term khanda in Pali means, is my understanding. It's basically bundle or heap or something like that. Sally Armstrong sometimes says we could just simply call it stuff made of other stuff. And in the Pali, apparently, this word was not so technical, but it was more just a normal everyday word, heap or bunch, something like that. So we've got the five bunches or the five heaps here. But aggregate may be a good word because, well, it's also got another aspect to it that reflects something about the term, or about these aggregates. So aggregate, the word in English, is either used as a noun in terms of like, this is an aggregate rock, it's a thing, or the word aggregate can be used as a verb, as an aggregate, to put together. And both of these aspects of the word come into play, that these five heaps are understood both as processes and as results of those processes. And so, for instance, there's definitions in the suttas for each of these five aggregates, both from the side of the process and from the side of the result. So, for instance, feeling. We've talked about feeling being pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. We've talked about that as exploring that aspect of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And that's one way in which that is described in the text for the feeling aggregate. Another way it's described is something like this. Somebody comes to the Buddha and says, why is it called feeling? And the Buddha says, it feels. That's why it's called feeling. So describing it as the process that feels, this part of our minds that's responsible for that meeting, feeling of experience. And likewise with the other aggregates. He says, you know, why is it called... Well, it's, the one around body is kind of odd. He uses a word play, a pun in the Pali. The Buddha uses a play on words in the Pali. And Thanissaro Bhikkhu tries to translate it in a way. So somebody says, so why is it called form? And the Buddha says, because it's deformed. It's impacted by flies, mosquitoes, heat. Essentially, looking at the experience of form as opposed to the thingness of form. And I think that's an aspect of all of these aggregates, that there's a way that we can understand it as the process and as the experience, perhaps, that the process understands or knows. So the process of feeling understands pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. The process of body meets hardness, coolness, heat. The process of perception recognizes our experience, recognizes bird, for example. So there's both this process side and what we know, what we recognize. And so in some ways these aggregates can be understood to describe not only what we are recognizing, so a way of seeing what happens in this experience, in this mind and body, what is recognized as experience, but also the process by which that recognition happens. And so I started by pointing that Gill said that the fourth foundation looks at processes that take us towards suffering or towards freedom. In a way, what this is pointing to is just the process nature of experience itself. And understanding something about that, beginning to explore that our system is a process engine, can be very freeing. the Buddha described the process of selfing in terms of these five aggregates, what he called I making and my making were variations on clinging to one or more of these aggregates. So we cling to body, the body is mine, or I am the body. We cling to feeling. We cling to being the one who knows. And this understanding or this teaching around the essentially looking at how our minds create this sense of self and misattribute a kind of an entity of I or me to a process is when we start to see the process nature of our experience, we begin to see that the attribution of I or me doesn't make sense. So it begins to undermine that belief. The Satipatthana Sutta, the teaching here, again, it's really simple. It is so simple. One understands, in contemplating the five aggregates of clinging, one understands, thus is material form. Thus is the arising of material form, and thus is the disappearance of material form. So first understanding, when it says thus, my sense of that word is this experience right here, right now, this is how form is appearing in this very moment. And so it's very direct, very experiential. So thus is form now, in this moment, thus. I like that word. It has a tendency to point me right in. Thus. We might say, it's like this. Form is like this in this moment. And then the exploration around impermanence. The Buddha encouraging us to recognize the impermanent coming and going nature of our bodily experience. And likewise for the others, thus is feeling, thus is the arising of feeling, and thus is the disappearance of feeling. Thus is perception, thus is the arising of perception, thus is the disappearance of perception. Thus are formations, thus is the arising of formations, thus is the disappearance of formations. Thus is consciousness, thus is the arising of consciousness, thus is the disappearance of consciousness. So again, a pointing to direct experience and noticing the impermanent nature of that experience. In the fourth foundation, this recognition of impermanence is very highlighted. Every exercise, well, almost every exercise, incorporates it right in the instructions as this, right in the instructions about how to observe that, or what's important about observing that. In the hindrances yesterday, Gil was speaking about this piece, the noticing, the presence, the absence, and then the arising of and the passing of the hindrance. Very powerful reflection and recognition. So the emphasis on impermanence is not exclusive to the fourth foundation. Actually, when we look at the refrain, which we've been doing from time to time, the middle section of that refrain, again, points us to impermanence. Noticing the arising, noticing the passing, the arising and passing of the breath, of the experience of our volitional activity, of our daily activities, of the experience of the elements, of feeling. And so this contemplation on impermanence is woven entirely throughout every single exercise. So it's highlighted, worth noticing that, worth recognizing this is probably important. We should probably attend to this piece about impermanence. So the instructions here are very simple. Thus is material form, thus is perception, thus is mental formations. But if we don't know much about what they are, it's kind of hard to see them. And so some information to elaborate a little bit on what each of these areas is, how we might experience it, how we can explore it. I'm going to take some time to do that right now, to begin to point in experience to how we can see each of these, both to some extent the process, but also the experience of each of them. So the body, we've had a whole foundation on the body, and so we've been exploring this already. I think it is pointing to the commentaries point to the body referring to these four elements, and also mention that sight, sound, smell, taste are also aspects of form. So all of our physical senses participate in this exploration of form. We put food in our mouth. It's form. We put food in our mouth, and the experience of taste arises. So there's a process there. The form of the food meets the kind of the form of our tongue, and there's a process by which taste is created. That's the process nature in this example. So for each of our senses, there's that kind of process going on as we contact experience, as our eye meets sight, as our nose contacts smell, our body contacts physicality, we experience body, form, we experience form. And we've been exploring, and many of you have actually been describing in your experience, the way form seems to be not very stable. Sometimes people describe it as bubbly or just vibrating. Even when there's a sense of solidity, sometimes the solidity feels like it's in one place in one moment and then another place in another moment. So our experience of it has this nature of impermanence, of coming and going. For each of these aggregates, the Buddha also offered an analogy that kind of both speaks to the impermanent nature and the kind of delusive nature of each of these aggregates, or why we tend to cling to them, why we tend to be deceived into thinking that there's something there to cling to. And for body, he compares he gives an analogy. The body is like a lump of foam. And it's actually said that particular sutta in which the Buddha is describing the analogies was inspired because they were sitting near the river, and he saw this lump of foam on the surface of the river just floating down the river. And that inspired him to give this talk with these analogies. And so a lump of foam, actually one day I got to see something like this at the coast. A friend of mine and I were at the beach in San Francisco one windy March day about a year ago. And it was very windy, and because it was so windy, there was a lot of churning in the waves and a lot of, I don't know if you've been at the coast when there's a lot of churning going on in the water, but it creates these big chunks of foam sometimes. And this day, because it was so windy, these big chunks of foam, and sometimes they were big, like, you know, the size of this. They could be this big. Big chunks of foam. And they were skittering down the beach because it was so windy. They were just blowing down the beach. And as they blew down the beach, they just vanished. They didn't vanish all at once, but it was like they just disintegrated. They disintegrated into bits because there's nothing substantial there. And the Buddha points to this kind of insubstantiality to our physical being. One time I was meeting my experience in the body, and it just felt like, it did feel like bubbles popping. Like as I breathed, it just pop, 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 pop. And it's like, wow, that analogy of foam. It came into my mind. It's like, wow. It was the experience. There was nothing that lasted for just more than a split second. Just pop, 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 pop. And this is contacting this impermanent nature of the experience of body. And on reflection, we can understand the impermanent nature of body. The Buddha in the first foundation actually encourages a reflection on the decaying of the body at death. You know, in the time of the Buddha, there were charnel grounds, and bodies just kind of got put into the charnel grounds, and you could go sit there and day after day see how, you know, the corpse decomposed, and within the space of a few days, completely just seeing it just disintegrate like a lump of foam. Then feeling, the process of feeling, process of recognizing pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Again, we've explored this quite a bit because there's a whole foundation on feeling. So I won't go into too much here. The analogy the Buddha uses for feeling is like it's a bubble kind of floating on the surface of the water. If you have a puddle and it's raining, you can see these bubbles form. When the drop of water hits, sometimes it creates a little air bubble, and the bubble floats on top of the water for a little while. And to me, the analogy here points to the way sometimes, as I've watched these bubbles on water, they linger. You know, they look like they're there. They look like there's something. And there is a something there. There is something to be seen. There's something there, but it's so fleeting. And suddenly, if you're watching it, you know, it'll linger. You'll see it. It'll linger. And then suddenly, poof, the conditions are gone, and poof, it vanishes. In an instant, it's gone. And I think sometimes our feelings seem like this too. They feel like they linger, but as soon as the conditions change, the feeling changes. Perception, the process of perception. This one we haven't talked about too much, this retreat. Perception is the process by which our minds recognize what's happening. And so we look around the room and we recognize walls, people, zabutons, bell. We recognize this because our mind is doing this work for us. It's kind of doing this like pattern matching and looking at experience and saying, well, what have I experienced like this before? It comes up with the closest match. It's kind of like this process by which we go back into our memory banks and say, oh, that's like that, so that's what that is. So you know, maybe for those of you here for the very first time, this is the very first time you've seen those black mesh folding chairs. But probably you recognized it as a chair. That wasn't so hard. Because there's some similarities there that the mind can go back and recognize. So this is a process of our minds. It's an incredibly useful process. I mean, if I had to sit here, navigate every day, I woke up in my room at the treehouse and had to figure out, oh, that's a wall. Oh, that's the floor. That's a door. I can walk through that. It would be overwhelming. I can look out here and instantly recognize all of you as who I know with very little effort. Thank goodness this process works for us. And yet, the analogy here around perception is that of a mirage. Now, a mirage is it's an interesting phenomenon. I think in everyday language and in English, when we say, you know, it's like a mirage, we're thinking it's something that's not there. That's often the colloquial usage of that word in English. But the actuality of a mirage, a real mirage, like in the desert, when you are seeing as if it's water. Many of you have seen this, or maybe driving on a hot day. Sometimes it looks like the road is covered with water, something like that. What's going on there perceptually, what's going on in our perception, what we are seeing, because there are heat waves coming up from the ground, it creates something in which it creates a kind of like, I guess it's probably partly the heat and partly the water molecules coming up from the ground. It creates almost like a mirror. And so when we are seeing something that looks like water on the road, what we are seeing is the sky reflected on the heat waves. And so it's a reflection of something that's there. It's like a mirror reflection. Sometimes you can, apparently, when the conditions are just right, if there's a ship below the horizon, you can see a ship floating in the air. If the conditions are just right with the heat waves, you get these ghost ships floating in the air. And so it's a reflection of something that's there, but it's not the actual thing. And so this, again, this points to the way in which we can get confused about perception. Because as I look out in the room, I mean, I know intellectually, occasionally I've been able to actually see that what's happening is that the mind is constructing at a little tiny blips of color and form. The mind is constructing all of you. So what I'm seeing, what you're all seeing, is a construction in your mind. And so our perception of the world is created by our minds. There's nothing that we experience that is not a construction of our minds. And this is really hard to remember. So, like the mirage, looking out here and seeing all of you and knowing all of your names and remembering something about what you said in the meetings, that's all arising in my mind. I do believe you're all actually sitting out there. It's not that I think, like, I'm this disembodied brain floating in some vat somewhere and it's just like, you know, dreaming something up. So my understanding is that this construction, this inner construction of what I'm experiencing is a reflection of what's actually out there. And at times it's a pretty good reflection. I mean, I will remember, I remember Gil when I, you know, I see Gil and it's like, I don't confuse him for another person. So it's working pretty well. I don't walk up to Gil and say, "Hey, Charlie." And this process, it works. It's a pretty good process. And yet, that process of perception is very easily influenced by views, by opinions, by ideas, by agendas. So this is where it gets kind of messy, when we don't recognize that what we are experiencing is perception. We believe our perceptions to be an accurate representation of what's actually out there. And it can be very close. But again, to recognize that recognition is often influenced by how we feel or what ideas we have. So if I have some time, I'll talk a little bit more of that in a bit. So this process of perception can be seen in our experience, recognized in some simple ways. Initially, I mean, probably one of the easiest ways to start to see this is through the avenue of hearing. At least for me, this is probably one of the clearest ways to see this, because as we're sitting here in meditation, our eyes are closed often, and we're just noticing what's arising in our experience. And then maybe we hear a sound. We hear a bird. There's the sound. There's the body, the form, the sound wave impacts our ear, and there's hearing that's happening. And then there's the recognition that it's a bird. So the sound itself is just pitch and tone. It's just this kind of thing happening in our ear and created a sense of sound in our mind. And then, because we've heard a lot of birds, and when we were kids, you know, it's like, "What's that, Mom?" "Oh, it's a bird." "Okay." "Oh, and what about that?" "Well, that's a bird too. That's a crow. That's a woodpecker." We start to learn. And so we hear a sound. And very quickly, our mind recognizes it as woodpecker, or as mourning dove, or owl. So that recognition process can be seen or witnessed in our meditation. And you might recognize this by, you know, hearing the sound and then hearing your mind say the word owl. Or perhaps creating an image of an owl in your mind. I've seen this sometimes with, you know, hearing the cars go by on the road. It's like an image of a car. It's like it's got, I know what kind of car it is. I know what color it is. You know, my mind has created an image of it. So this is also the process of perception. Sometimes it can come through as if we're talking to ourselves, or as if we're hearing somebody say something, or as an image. It might be as a movie almost. So this is perception at work. It's a rudimentary form of thought, essentially, this recognition process. And so we can see this. We can witness this at work. Sometimes we get confused about this, thinking that I'm naming things, I'm doing this. It's like we start to recognize in our experience this process of perception at work, and it feels like I'm sitting here saying all of these words. Why am I saying all of these words in my mind? But it's when somebody says that, I often encourage them to see, well, can you stop doing it? You know, is it you actually doing it? Are you volitionally deciding to name these things? Or is it your mind doing its recognition process? So this is a way we can start to see perception at work and begin to see, again, how certain perceptions very easy to have misperceptions. And so the process of perception and the impermanence of perception can be very highlighted for us when perception makes a mistake. And so one kind of, it's in the suttas is a classic example of this, of walking into a room where there's a coiled rope in the corner and perceiving it as snake. So there's that recognition, that perception of it as snake. And then as the eyes adjust, recognizing, oh, it's not a snake, it's a rope. So the seeing how the perception changes, that perception, and when we think it's a snake, what happens to us? So our experience, and this moves into the next aggregate of volitional formation, our experience of what we're perceiving influences, or we have relationships with ideas, and so we see a coiled form and think it's a snake. Fear, heart pounding, all of that happens. And then we see, oh, it's a rope. The fear subsides. So we see the impermanence of the perception, and the impermanence also of its relationship to what it, how it informs our experience. So the volitional formation, this is the many mental activities that involve some kind of intentional activity in the mind, but intentional activity here does not mean consciously willing. It's, so for instance, that example around the snake and fear. You know, fear is understood to be a volitional activity, an intentional activity of the mind. It's a, I think actually in some ways we could call the volitional formations, they have a component of agency to them. They're very active. Volitional formations are very active. And so they tend to, they are constructed, and they tend to construct more things. So, fear from the seeing of the snake, that fear is constructed based on our past history of snakes, our thoughts about snakes, what we've been told about snakes, so a bunch of information. And, our seeing of it, our perception that rope is a snake. So the perception that it is a snake contributes to the arising of this volitional formation, and our whole history around relationships to snakes have contributed to. So while that is understood to have a volitional aspect to it, it's not like I said, oh, I'm going to decide to get afraid now. It's a process that happens. It's a, the volition piece of it is that these kind of mental activities, these volitional activities, have an influencing nature to them. So, for instance, anger tends to construct anger. Actually, the understanding in volitional formations is that they construct our world. In the texts describing the volitional formations as a verb, I mentioned that there was this teaching that the Buddha said, oh, it feels, that's why it's called feeling. It perceives, that's why it's called perception. Well, with the volitional formations, it gets a little more complicated. I'll read a different version of this. In this case, the translator is calling them fabrications. Why are they called fabrications? Because they fabricate fabricated things. That's why they're called fabrications. What do they fabricate as a fabricated thing? They fabricate form as a fabricated thing. They fabricate feeling as a fabricated thing. They fabricate perception as a fabricated thing. They fabricate fabrications as a fabricated thing. And they fabricate consciousness as a fabricated thing. Basically, here it's saying this aspect of our minds is the engine that constructs our reality. All of those, the fabrications are fabricating the aggregates, fabricating body or form, our feeling, our perception, our other aggregates, our other mental formations, and the knowing aspect of our mind. And so anger, for example, if anger's arising in our system, it tends to construct feelings in the body. It actually can distort our faces. There may be a hard expression on our face. We may feel sensations of pressure and heat. This is the fabricating nature of anger on the body. It tends to fabricate unpleasantness in the feeling when we experience anger. It tends to fabricate perceptions, perhaps that we're being attacked or that something is dangerous, something like that. You know, I've definitely seen when the mind is averse, check this out at times. If you've had an experience or noticed that there's some kind of aversion kind of hovering around, do you tend to have anything your eyes land on then start to become unpleasant? I was watching on walking meditation one time. I was doing back and forth walking and was noticing there was a version in walking meditation just like went hand in glove for me. And so I noticed a lot of aversion when I was doing walking meditation, and a lot of it seemed to have to do with being surrounded by lots of people. So I was doing walking meditation and just noticing again, and as I kind of described the other day, noticing the aversion. I was noticing wanting when I described it the other day, but I was just noticing the aversion. And at one point I came to the end of my path and I turned around and my eyes landed on shoes. And my mind exploded in anger. It's like, who put those shoes down there? It's like, okay. More aversion. This is the nature. So it tends to fabricate. So when we perceive things, and when our attention lands on things, we tend to land on things that we think are unpleasant. We tend to perceive things as unpleasant. I mean, sometime I might have turned around. If I'd been in a state of bliss and I turned around and seen those shoes, it might have been like, wow, look at those shoes. They're so amazing. They're vibrating in color. How we perceive things, how we take things in, really impacted by our mental formations. So anger tends to distort our face. We feel pressure, heat in our body, tend to notice things as unpleasant. We tend to perceive things preferentially as unpleasant. We may seek out things and have perceive them to be threatening or things to be averse to. Anger tends to construct more anger. And our consciousness is directed by the filter of anger. I think I talked about this to some extent the other day when I talked about delusion, that when we have some kind of filter on our minds, if we have a filter of anger on our minds, then we tend to take things in that confirm that. Like, yeah, I have a right to be angry. So our consciousness kind of narrows to the things that reflect that state. So in this way, our mental formations are a very powerful engine in our experience. And we've been spending a lot of time looking at mental formations, actually, because pretty much all of our mind states, when we were talking about the mind state, noticing presence and absence of greed, aversion, delusion, contraction, distraction, those are all mental formations. The hindrances are all mental formations. Mindfulness, concentration, the state of peace that we've been exploring and opening to that open hand, the state of the knowing. The seven factors of awakening, tranquility, calm, concentration, equanimity, energy, investigation, mindfulness, delight, joy, those are all mental formations. And we are asked over and over again to recognize them and recognize their impermanent nature. We so tend to collapse, this is who I am. Attribute a sense of permanence. It's how many of you have had the thought when something arises, oh, the rest of the retreat's going to be like this? You know, that we do that. And then watch, notice how long it lasts. You know, one day on retreat, I had this thought. It's like I was scraping pots and I was angry. I picked up a pot. I was the food finisher. And after breakfast, I picked up the pot and it was all stuck with oatmeal. And I was scraping. I was like angry. Okay, so anger. I'm noticing the anger. I'm scraping the pot. My mind said, oh, anger. I guess I'm going to be angry for hours. I put down the pot. I picked up the next pot and it was joy. Oh, joy. Wow. It's like impermanence. I guess I'm not going to be angry all day. So again, recognizing this impermanent nature of our experience is huge aspect of this exploration. And I think the piece around especially with the volitional formations, noticing the relationships between how our mind is, as we've been talking about, when we can recognize the stillness of mind, when something arises in that stillness, there's a different relationship to it than if the mind is contracted and tight. And we can see this. We can see this interrelationship. See the conditioned nature of our experience. And in seeing that conditioned nature, also understand the impermanent nature of our experience. As we see the impermanent nature of all of these aggregates, the mind that wants to cling to them, to stop it up and say, this is who I am. This is how I am. This is where I am. This is what I am. All these ways that we construct a sense of self begins to be recognized as, this is what I am in this instant, and the next instant it's something else. And so the tendency to congeal and to solidify begins to weaken as we see and recognize these processes, both as processes and the impermanent nature of what's happening. Then consciousness, the fifth aggregate, is often understood to just be the very simple kind of knowing of experience. Really, oh, I forgot to talk about the analogy with volitional formations. This one is, the Buddha says that volitional formations are like a banana tree. And that might not make a lot of sense until you get to look at a banana tree, which I got to do when I was in the Peace Corps on the South Pacific Island. And banana trees have this interesting property that they have all these leaves that have a very thick stem at the bottom. It's like a thick stem at the bottom, and then it goes up and there's leaves on the top. And those thick stems at the bottom kind of overlap each other at the base of the banana tree. And if you cut down a banana tree when it's not flowering, as I understand, if I'm understanding this correctly, when you cut down the banana tree when it's not flowering, and you basically, it's like, feels pretty solid, and some of those banana trees, they've got a trunk like, 5 inches in diameter. They're pretty solid looking. Takes an axe to cut it down. It's got some solidity to it. But you start looking for the center of that, looking for heartwood, looking for anything in there that's really solid, and you pull off the leaves, and you end up with a pile of leaves. And there's nothing in the middle. It's just the illusion of solidity created by this layering. And to me, that's a good analogy for the way mental formations work. It creates a sense of solidity because they kind of interweave each other, they reinforce each other. Yeah, I am a miserable person. That is who I am. I've been miserable for years. I'm going to be miserable for more years. Layer upon layer upon layer of this idea and the experience reinforcing itself. But then you just start to look at it, and it just reveals itself to just be ideas and thoughts and feelings of that feeling of misery. And nothing really solid in the middle. And then consciousness, this process of knowing, of recognizing, just this bare, not the recognition in terms of identification of what it is, but just this bare, like, knowing It said there's six kinds of knowing for each of the six sense bases. And so I think of almost like one of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, says, the knowing is just a little stupid. You know, it just knows, yeah, sight, sound, hearing, seeing, smelling. It doesn't know much about what it is. The other processes are needed to construct the fullness of our experience. But that knowing process is really important. It's kind of the place where our body system meets all the stuff in the world. That contact of eye and the form, the eye and the light coming in creates the image. So there's the contact right there and the knowing in that moment. That's usually understood as a simple kind of knowing. The analogy for this is a magic show. It's like a magic show. And, you know, it's not so obvious. I've not seen much in the way of an understanding of what that means. But when I reflect on it myself, it's like, you know, what a magic show does is it's like, you know, creates the illusion of something happening that's not really there. Or that's not actual. And so, you know, with consciousness, we've got these six avenues of consciousness coming together. And the magic show for me is that our minds put it together and make sense of this as a kind of a whole. It's like I look at that wall over there. I know it's a wall. I see it. There's a sight. And you know, some part of me knows very clearly the hardness of that wall, even though I'm not touching it right now. And so I'm not going to go running headlong into that wall. Because in the seeing of the wall, the mind has woven in with this magic show the understanding of its hardness. So the various sense bases, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, kind of all get woven together in this magic show of consciousness. You know, what's coming in are these independent bits of experience, and somehow our consciousness puts it all together. You know, consciousness, when we start to settle more deeply into our experience, there's a way in which we begin to touch into this just very simple knowing aspect, and it can be quite peaceful as our minds touch into that really simple aspect of experience. And it's an easy place because, and sometimes we feel we may feel like, oh, I've this is what's real, being in the knowing. And the consciousness is also an impermanent experience. It's coming and going really, really quickly. But because it's coming and going so quickly, it's really hard to see that it's coming and going. And so we often attribute a sense of real stability to knowing and awareness. And at first it can feel that way. And often we encourage you, yeah, it sure feels that way. Just keep looking. Keep hanging out there. Don't assume it's solid, but just, you know, just hang out there. At times we can begin to see kind of almost a dissolving of experience. As our minds begin to get enough continuity of awareness, we begin to see the impermanence of consciousness too. And at this point, sometimes it can be a little unsettling. It can feel like, I don't even know how to be mindful right now. There's nowhere to land. no sense of stability, no sense of security. And so the seeing into the impermanent nature of consciousness can be a lot unsettling sometimes. And yet we just have to keep practicing and recognize that the main thing to explore there is to recognize, how am I with that? Oh, there's fear happening with this unsettled, with this sense of nowhere to land, and where there's a sense of oppression, of feeling just like overwhelmed with sense contact, or a feeling of slipping through, groundlessness, and a feeling of confusion around that. Important to recognize the relationship with that as we start to touch into the impermanent nature of consciousness. So this is somewhat just more of information. I said the other day, sometimes a description of things can just kind of go in like rain and be absorbed, and you don't have to try to see any of this in some ways. Sometimes just having had some of these described, you may, in your experience, begin to recognize them. There can be times it's useful to pick up one or the other of these. If there was a time in my practice in Burma where the perception aggregate was strong. It's like it was just my mind was really interested in exploring it, and so I took a number of days to just notice experience through that lens, and so that can happen sometimes. But I caution you about making a project out of this. I really caution you about making a project out of it. But if you happen to notice while you're sitting a sound, and then see the mind create the image, oh, perception at work, that's what's happening. And so now I'm going to offer you the instruction. Having given you this talk, forget it. Don't think about it. Let it go. And so let's let it go and sit for just a few moments. Coming back to just the simplicity of this moment. Abide and explore the intimacy of thus. It's like this right now.